fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries.
Hey there, Central Florida, and welcome to another Sunday night edition of the American Adversaries, the classic three-hour tour. We have just pushed off, but there's going to be a rowboat headed our way as Lair Adams joins us at some point in the first hour of the show. At least that's the plan. Nostra Dennis here along with Christopher Hart, Johnny Guns. We got Paris in the studio. Paris is doing something real cool. It's great to have interns.
You mean Lucas?
Paris. I'm sorry, Lucas Paris. Sorry. I'm sorry, I get the first name, last name confused
there
here.
You go.
But Lucas has got us going on Ustream. So if you go right now live to Ustream.tv, and then you type in the words American Adversary, you can see what's going on here in the studio. And you know what? We're even going to give you a bonus if you go there. You're going to get to see what happens at the breaks. Oh, no! Oh, no! Well, we've got a lot to talk about tonight, including two new Saints. No, I'm not talking about L.A. Clippers owner Donald Sterling. And I'm not talking about Nevada rancher Cliven Bundy. Neither one of them is a saint. Neither one of them is an angel. But we'll talk a little bit later about both of them and racism. No, I'm talking about two guys who are called Angelo Giuseppe Roncalli and Carol Joseph Wotila, also known as Pope John XXIII and Pope John Paul II. Both were canonized today. Now, if you're not a Catholic, you might not know that in order to become a saint, one of the prerequisites is you have to have been the originator of at least two verifiable miracles. In the case of John Paul II, it was two women who were both cured of incurable diseases after praying to the Pope after his death. So he got to add to his legacy as a leader of the world's Catholics after he died. Right across from me, though, is a man who is still working on his first miracle, and that is getting liberals to face reality and listen to common sense, Christopher Hart.
Talk about big ones at that.
Good luck with that.
All right. Thank you so very much, Nostra Dennis, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We appreciate you being out there, and at least temporarily, we're right now, you're listening to us on 1520 WBZW, because we are momentarily, at least, being preempted by the Rays. I believe they just wrapped up the game, so it won't be long before we'll be back up on 660, the AM 660, the answer.
You know, the Rays were idle today. Unfortunately, they had a game scheduled. Yeah.
They did not play so well. Yeah. All right, but we're going to try to be more on our game tonight, so welcome to our three-hour tour, and that's right, we're just getting underway, and Lair is on the way, and I am Christopher Hart. Lair Adams will be here shortly. That was Nostra Dennis, and we also have in the studio live with us Johnny Gunn.
I have to apologize. I'm a little bit vain tonight because on my computer I just went to Ustream.tv and there we are.
You're looking at yourself. You know, if you hold that laptop up to Lucas's laptop, it could be like an infinite series of windows of American Adversary.
Black hole radio.
Cool.
And you can't see him, but Lucas is manipulating the camera. So he's got us on up on the computer video, so check it out. And Jeff Sinis is on the bridge tonight, guiding us through the ether, so we are in good hands. And as soon as we do go back up on 660, we'll be sure to let you know so that you can go back up there in case you get better reception there or whatever. But we do have a big show lined up for you tonight. Got a lot to talk about. A lot of it's going to revolve around Clive and the Clippers. And I'm also going to talk about, I think what we have been presented with here this week is in three things that happened. One thing was Clive. and what he said. And we have a transcript, thanks to Nostra Dennis. And also the tape that evidently has the L.A. Clippers owner speaking out. And then you also have the Supreme Court decision, which, quote-unquote, according to the liberals, struck down affirmative action, which it did anything but. But we're going to talk about all of those things because I believe in a Supreme Court decision, not particularly this one, but the one that more or less has guided the principle of affirmative action, in particular Brown versus Board of Education, the Warren Court, 50s. You have the a decision being based on a inherently racist presumption. And what you have with Clive Bundy is a guy who stumbled through what he was saying, but he actually said something, yes, very accurate and very correct. He used some language that we don't normally hear anymore, but it used to be fine in, you know, to be used. As a matter of fact, it's the United Negro College Fund, wasn't it? Right?
Yep,
and the NAACP. Yep. What's the NAACP?
Colored.
Yeah, right. And those are the words that are being held against Clive Bundy.
Clive and Bundy spoke how men of his age and background speak, whether they are racist or not. It's
the vernacular of his age. If it's racist, then the United Negro College Fund needs to get off their asses and change the name to the United Negro College Fund. And the same thing for the NAA colored people. Okay? If those phrases and those words are inherently racist,
then change them.
Change your name.
Get rid of them.
Yep.
All right? Nah. So we're going to be talking a lot about that stuff. Carl is going to be doing his corner, and so we're really revved up about that. But my focus is going to be showing that it is the liberals who have been working upon the racist presumption. And they have been projecting that onto others to only cover it up for themselves. So we're going to be talking about that later on. We've got a great guest lined up for you tonight, too, a man by the name of Carl Lauer. Carl Lauer has lived a fascinating life. The man has he still runs a family-owned business. Actually, his sons run it now, but his father started it. He ran it, and they still run it. It's a manufacturing business, and it was through that manufacturing business that he actually got into the wrestling business. Mm. And we'll talk about that with him, but also of interest to us is that he found himself on something called the Congressional Advisory Board at a very important period in time. And you just talked about Pope John Paul II. This man sat on that board from 1980 through 92, the Reagan and George H.W. Bush administrations. And of course, Reagan and John Paul II, Margaret Thatcher, changed the world. And then George H.W. Bush was there with the fall of the Soviet Union and the fall of the Berlin Wall. So this man was right there in Washington as these things were happening. So we've got a fascinating interview lined up with him. We've got Sunny, our California glow girl, and it's thanks to her that we have Carl Lauer on the show. And she'll be joining us live from L.A. And, of course, we're going to get her take on what they're saying in L.A. Because she lives right across the street from one of those arenas. I don't know
if the Staples Center. That's where the Lakers and Clippers play.
Well, there you go.
The Lakers still play there. Not very well, though.
Right. Okay. Well, the Clippers obviously are in the, not just because, they're in the playoffs also.
Right.
And so there's things going on to L.A. that we'll be talking
about.
They're
playing today, right, John?
Yeah, they were playing as we went on the air.
Yeah. And, of course, we have some great WTF news lined up for you. Nostra Dennis has got some stories he's going to pull out of the past for us. And Lair's got his closing that he is delivering and will deliver to you and us all at the same time later on in the show. So we got a lot going on. It's going to be a great night, I believe. It's a beautiful afternoon here in Central Florida. I hope if you are here in Central Florida, that you are enjoying the weather. If you're not here, I hope the weather is nice wherever that you are. And once again, we're doing something unique tonight. We're on TV, sort of.
You know, this would be a great opportunity to say thank you to Ed and Luann Roxy from Roxy Pacifics.
For the great avocados.
Hand me that avocado.
Yeah, California-grown avocados.
I want to take this and bring it over to Ustream so that our Ustream viewers can look and see what a sweet, juicy, ripe, tender avocado this is. Just check it out.
You're going to make some great guacamole with that.
Look at the size of
holy guacamole.
Take a big old bite of that.
Mm. Ah, yeah. We should peel one and eat it, yeah. By the way, they get Anyway, the great food.
Now, they have to be a little mushy, Luann was saying, before you rip them open.
You want it to be a little bit soft. Use them. Okay. Exactly.
These might be another day or so.
These are just about there.
Okay.
Yeah, just about.
And, we got about a dozen of them from them, and we thank them so much.
Yeah, definitely we do. And we thank them, of course, for being part of our show with Roxy Pacifics. And Roxy Pacifics is a great new all-natural, antibacterial, anti-inflammatory, good for whatever ails your skin inside and out. And it's really great stuff. And I like to call it fertilizer for your skin because it's got just the right chemical composition to help your skin grow healthily. This is the great thing about this stuff. Like if you put it on a scratch or a burn or a cut, or a rash. This isn't just to cover up the symptoms. This is actually to help your skin heal itself. Great stuff. Roxy Pacifics. And tonight we'll be giving away a couple of free bottles of Roxy Pacifics. And you'll want to definitely be in on that. In the meantime, you can find out more about Roxy Pacifics at their website, which is R-O-C-Z-E-Y Pacifics with an X .net. That's RoxyPacifics.net. So I invite you to go there and check out Roxy Pacifics.
You know what I like? The idea that Ed might be taking his product on to the Dr. Oz show because it took a wizard to invent this stuff, so the wizard should be on Oz, don't you think?
It would be fabulous, and I will not be surprised when it does happen. And before we really get going here, though, I'd just like to thank the folks who came out to the Sanford Orlando International Airport last night and helped us welcome back the Honor Flight.
I would say it was a cool event, but the AC was broke. So it was a warm event, but it was wonderful.
It was great. It was a pleasant evening out, so people could step outside and cool off. But in my situation, I just sort of blew in there at the end, right, just as it was beginning.
Perfect.
And perfect timing.
Great timing.
And it was only because I was at the Predators game last night, thanks to Ken V. Heck and the great folks over at the Predators. And
they broke the voodoo curse?
They broke the curse. They put a spell on the voodoo and whipped them pretty good. And it was a hard-fought game on both sides, but the Preds prevailed and in a masterful fashion. It was one of the few arena games that didn't come down to the last possession.
Yeah.
You knew really with about a minute and a half, 2 minutes to go, which is a long time in arena football, that the Predators were going to win that game.
Every now and then you want to win by more than a touchdown.
Yeah, and so it was a great evening for me. I enjoyed the game, and with Joseph and Mary Lee from Vacation Travel Planners, and hope you guys can join us the next time the Predators are in town, which will be May the 24th, so it'll be a while yet. But they are on a roll, buddy. They're playing good football.
I can't wait to get out there. We are the American Adversaries. It's a Sunday night. You stick around, because we're going to be right back, maybe talk a little bit more about the Honor Flights.
Blair, and you know I've held more titles than Moolah's got wrinkles, but my favorite champions are those on the American Adversaries. Lair, Chris, Nostradamus on AM 660, The Answer.
And, of course, that's B. Brian Blair, and he's a great friend of ours, and he's still wrestling. He's going to be wrestling this coming weekend.
Mike, you know, he's not a big guy, but you can tell at his age, which is kind of like my age, he's still in really, really good shape.
And he's in an organization that our guest who's going to be on tonight, Carl Lauer, is a member of the board of, something called the, what is it called? Cauliflower Alley Club.
Okay.
Cauliflower.
Sounds like something Mickey Rooney
Alley
would be
Club.
In, right?
The CAC, that's right.
Hey, guys, we're going to be in the Cauliflower Alley Club.
There you go. So we'll be talking about that with Carl Lauer later on in the show. Before we really get rolling, though, I was just getting started. I want to thank everybody once again who came out last night and joined us to welcome the Honor Flight back. It was a great event. And from what I saw of it, the band sounded good from what little I heard of them. And there were a lot of people there and got an enthusiastic enthusiastic reception for all the great vets who came back and their escorts and family members who were with them.
I was impressed by a couple of things. First, there was about the same crowd that there was the last time they came in, even though they came in there, if they listened to our show, thinking they were going to have to pay for parking at the airport. You would think that might have scared some people off, but turns out we didn't have to pay for parking, but everybody parked in the short-term parking without even, you know, without even batting an eye, because they figured these guys are worth it.
And it turns out you didn't have to pay.
That's right. They waved us right through at the end. I was also impressed by the number of veterans who, after being up at 4 in the morning to get to the airport, going up there and going through all the memorials, including Arlington Cemetery and the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, they got off the plane, walked down the escalator. A lot of them were in wheelchairs. A lot more of them, though, walked under their own power and looked like they could go another several hours.
I'd say it was about two-thirds, one-third. Two-thirds walking and one-third in the wheelchairs. And one of the ones walking was this little petite, beautiful little 99-year-old woman.
99.
Who was a whack. Yeah, and Ed Reardon told us about her a little bit when he was on the show with us Thursday. And there she was. I mean, she couldn't have been... if she was 5 feet. I mean, she was on the short side of 5 feet, right? And it she couldn't have been maybe 75, 80 pounds, but she had a big old grin on her face, and she was just beautiful as she could be. And you could tell she had, had a really big day and deserved to have a big day. And something that I noticed, and perhaps I missed this the last time, but most or all of them were wearing buttons that had pictures of them from their days when they served.
What they did was they asked their families if they can come up with a snapshot of them.
Yeah.
During the time they were serving. And a lot of times they'll make these buttons, not telling them they made them until the morning of the flight. Then they'll say, okay, this one's you, right? Whoa, yeah, this one's me.
Yeah.
I'm a handsome man.
Well, I found it cool because as each one would come by, I'd look for some sort of like identifiers to what military service
they did
or maybe what they did while they were in there, and it helped out a lot. And they seemed to appreciate when like you saw he was a Navy man, you'd go, hey, seaman, or hey, sailor, you know, and he'd look up like, yeah, you know. And one fellow was wearing, he was a bomber pilot, B-17s.
And he had the cap on.
And he was wearing the bomber jacket.
Ooh, wow.
Yes, sir.
Still fits in that thing.
It sure did. And it looked really good, and he looked really good in it. And it was a great event. Now, it just so happens that tonight at the Orlando International Airport, the Villages Honor Flight group is getting back.
Right. So, they'll be in, I think, around 9 o'clock tonight?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if you folks would like to go out there and welcome them back as well. But it's a great event, and the next Honor Flight will be this fall. And if you'd like to get involved, we'll help you out do that.
I was impressed, too, by there were 75 veterans from all the services and from all the wars. Actually, every war all the way through the Gulf War was represented.
Yeah.
Because 12 of the Guardians were also either active or retired military.
Right.
Some were guys who had gone as veterans and were the actual veterans and then came back to be Guardians for someone else.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Johnny, you were there.
Yeah, it was just an amazing time. I've been to the past two that have been into Orlando Sanford International Airport, and just a way to just honor and regard these gentlemen for their service. You know, they've done so much even before I was born, and a chance to shake their hand, to give them an ovation and welcome them back for things that I couldn't do myself, and just. Yeah, it's more than words, and it's just incredibly humbling to be there and be a part of that scene.
Yeah. And so, of course, we'll let you know when the next opportunity comes up. And in the meantime, this Friday, you can join us for an event. Let's see, I'll have to pull the details out, but it's an honor medal recipient from World War II who's going to be speaking here in Orlando Friday, and we're going to be doing the remote broadcast from down there in Windermere from where he's going to be speaking. And there you go. Thank you, Nostradamus. You're right on the ball.
Trappy.
Herschel Woody Williams, Chief of Warrant Officer, retired United States Marine Corps. He was a flamethrower on Iwo Jima. And Iwo Jima had a lot of caves, and they were dug in really, you know, securely there, and that's how they got him out. And
he's the last surviving veteran of the Iwo Jima?
The last surviving Medal of Honor,
from
that battle. There were several Medal of Honor winners from that battle. But he's going to be joining us here in Central Florida, and it's going to be at the Pines at Windermere, Friday from 6 to 10 p.m. The tickets do cost $100 per seat for veterans, $150 per seat for other folks. I know those tickets prices are a little bit higher than normally the events that we talk about around here, but I think in this case it's worth it because they're two great charities that the tickets will go to help fund, and that is the Rotary Club as they try to do away with polio, but also the Herschel Woody Williams Medal of Honor Foundation as he tries to help out families that are called Gold Star families because they have lost a family member in service to our country. And so I hope you can join us for that as well. In the meantime, we'll be talking to him. We're trying to line up an interview with him live on the air. And it just so happens that he's going to be going to the White House when he leaves the Orlando area to meet with the president.
Wonder what he's going to have to say to the president.
I'm going to ask him to deliver a message.
It won't have anything to do with a kiss, I hope.
How did you know?
You're just fixated on this, man.
Well, what else is going to get the man's attention, right?
That's true. He might return the phone call. That's true.
That's what I'm saying. You know anything else? Oh, yeah, I've heard all that before. How many times has he heard that, my friend?
Maybe more than once.
I bet he don't even hear that from his wife anymore. Ooh, did I say that? Oh, what?
Oh.
if you read The Inquirer, anyway. All right. Anyway, no, she does take a lot of vacations by herself. I mean, not necessarily by herself. She takes a big entourage.
With all the girls in the family.
But
her girls, with her mom.
He yep. ain't in it.
With her girlfriends.
And, of course, he might be fine with that, too.
That's just fine. Hope you can have a good time. Go ahead, buy some souvenirs.
All right. Well, we're coming up on the bottom of the hour break. When we come back, we're going to have some stories out of the past. We got Carl, who's lining up to do his corner with us here. And then we're going to be talking about racism. And then we're going to be talking to our guest. And we're going to be talking to Sonny. And then we're going to be talking to Johnny. And then we're going to be talking to Lair. And we'll be talking to you, if you'd like to, folks. 407-774-8255 is the number. And don't forget to keep that phone close, because we have our Who Said That contest, and we got a couple of free bottles on the rocks of Roxy Pacifics to give away.
The American Adversary is hoping to get back on the big stick really soon, or you can look at us at ustream.tv.
Smile.
Search American Adversaries. Hi, everybody!
You're on candid camera.
We'll be right back.
Is classic, as Noster Dennis likes to say, on our 3-hour tour tonight as we just now ease on out into some deep water. We are live on AM 660 The Answer, and we are coming to you live from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studios. And don't forget, for the best in Mercury Free dentistry, call my friend Dr. James E. Hardy at 407-678-3399. You know, and if they had that gizmo over here, that gizmo right there, if that would have been in here, what, it was a couple of weeks ago, you'd have seen my gum all puffed up like
this.
Yeah,
we really should have taken pictures, put it on Facebook, and had people put one word remarks.
It was swollen up pretty good. But yeah, like just about like this avocado that the Roxy sent us was stuck
right
in
thing.
There. But Dr. Hardy's taking very good care of me, so I'm in much better shape now. And it doesn't hurt so much to say things.
It doesn't hurt you.
Right. There you go. That's right. All right. So welcome back to the show, folks. I hope you're listening to us on 1520 WBZW or at AM660TheAnswer.com.
Or
watching us where now?
Ustream. U-S-T-R-E-A-M. Ustream.tv/blobbity-blobbity-American-adversary. Series, you'll find us.
All right. So, we are up live thanks to Lucas Paris, our intern, who's with us tonight. And I am Christopher Hart. That other voice you just heard was Noster Dennis. Right here to my left is Johnny Guns. And Jeff Sennis is on the other side of the glass on the bridge, as it were. Lair Adams will be here momentarily. And But it is that time of the show where we turn it over to
Nostradamus.
Uh-huh.
Predicts.
Yeah.
The past.
Thank you, 5-Minute Professor. And now is the time every Sunday night where we scoop up all the stories that fell off our plate Monday through Friday because, frankly, we just have too much on our plates. 2 hours wouldn't even be enough.
Not enough time, I was going to say, yeah.
That's right. 1 hour is barely enough. 2 hours probably still wouldn't be sufficient. So these are the leftovers, but that's okay because leftovers can be good after you warm them up just right.
That's right.
On Friday, Milwaukee Sheriff David A. Clark Jr. spoke to the NRA's annual meeting and got a standing ovation for this thought. Have you heard what former Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens wants to do?
No.
Oh, he wants to change the language of the Second Amendment.
Oh, does he now?
Yeah, because he thinks that the amendment should be changed so that the right to keep and bear arms is protected when serving in the militia. He thinks it needs to be defined that way.
And, of course, the militia will be outlawed because you wouldn't want to have some sort of organized...
No. A civilian police force, yes.
You're
but
right.
A militia?
No.
Well, Sheriff Clark, speaking in front of the NRA ILA Leadership Forum, Clark, by the way, is an African-American, said he would like to add a phrase of his own. Keep your hands off our guns, damn it.
I like that one better.
Last week, Breitbart News reported about Stevens wanting to make these changes. And according to our friend Tom Tillison's BizPackReview.com, Clark's reaction to Stevens suggested was heated. What part of shall not infringed does Justice Stevens not understand? Clark adds that he is tired of seeing the Second Amendment being treated like the bastard child of the Bill of Rights.
Yeah, very well put by the sheriff there.
You know, you remember that movie Field of Dreams, one of my favorite movies.
Baseball
yep.
movie.
Yeah, you remember?
Sure.
If you build it,
Kevin Costner,
they will come.
Yeah.
If you build it, they will come. Well, guess what? Democrats in Illinois are backing off their plan to build it in hopes that they will come. What am I talking about? I'm talking about the Obama Presidential Library. They voted to spend $100 million in tax dollars on the construction of a building for the Obama Presidential Library. Unfortunately, they weren't in session at the time they voted. The underhanded vote and the unfunded expenditure of millions the state doesn't have had Democrats running for cover. After politicians, the media, and the voters erupted in criticism of the move. The media! Imagine that!
Yeah.
The media coming out against Democrats in Illinois. The state, of course, has one of the worst budget overruns in the country.
Yep.
If you look through best places to live in America, the state of Illinois comes in 49th out of 50. One of the conflicts in this case is that the woman who heads the Illinois Arts Council Agency is the wife of the Speaker of the Illinois House. His name is
Helps
Michael Madigan, and her name is Shirley Madigan.
Oh, boy.
And Shirley was expected to have a big role in the planning and construction of this presidential library. Now, it does make sense, because if you want to pick a place for Obama's library to be, it's going to be either in Hawaii or Illinois or Nairobi. So if you got to pick one, it makes sense to put in a city like Chicago.
You mean Nairobi, Illinois, right?
No, of course. A suburb of Chicago. So, even things like this are starting to get the notice of the mainstream media.
How do you like that? Surely that's a good story.
It is a good story.
But don't call me Shirley.
And lastly, we've been talking about this. I feel like I'm saying the same story about 4 weeks in a row. But movies about God make money. Okay, Heaven is for Real, which the missus and I went to see the other night.
Yep, good.
Based on a best-selling book, it is a very good movie. It is a real-life story about a four-year-old boy and his visions of heaven after emergency surgery. The real-life thing happened back in 2003, so the kid is a teenager now. And his family says, he's no angel. But within 3 weeks of the book's release, the book debuted at number 3 on the New York Times bestseller list, eventually making it to number 1. Box Office Mojo, that's a place where you go if you want to find out how movies are doing either this week, last week, or cumulatively. And they reported that Sony targeted their marketing towards Christian audiences. They placed an emphasis on calling ahead for group tickets. And this is not unusual. God's Not Dead opened at number 4. Noah, although most Christians don't think it's really much of a Christian movie, had an okay opening. The problem with it is it cost $100 million to make.
Right.
So it's going to take a while to make it back. And, of course, Son of God earlier this year did very well and was in the top 3 movies for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Son of God was produced by adding some new footage and re-editing the Jesus sections in Mark Burnett's History Channel miniseries, The Bible. Did
right.
you know that? They
yes.
actually took the piece of the TV miniseries and opened it up a little bit.
Right.
It's gotten $60 million in revenue so far, Son of God, and it did not cost that much to make. So God movies make money. Maybe we should consider making more God movies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As for Heaven is for Real, quickie review of this is that if you're a Christian, you'll be pleased with the movie. If you're not a Christian, it will not really convince you to believe in God or to believe in heaven, but it will be something to think of at least.
Yeah. All right. All right. That's good. All right. I appreciate that.
And that is Nostradamus Predicts the Past.
All right. Well, I've got a couple of little things here from this past week that I wanted to talk about and then couldn't find time enough in the show to do it. And first one I'm calling the best of the IRS. Did you guys hear about this story where the IRS doled out these bonuses to employees with, let's just say, shoddy service records and
yes.
some who had even committed fraud against
yes.
the IRS?
Yes.
IRS employees committing fraud against the IRS still gets a job performance bonus? And we don't think that government is the problem? Is anybody paying attention to this?
Not the IRS.
Well, they're paying plenty good attention to us and what's in our pocketbooks and where we go to the doctor or who we buy our insurance from. Now, what's good for the goose should always be good for the gander. It should always be.
Well, this is a goose that's laid the golden egg.
Yeah.
It wants to keep laying it. It figures if it gives out these bonuses, they'll continue bringing money in.
Well, yeah. But it just goes to show, and Larry was talking about this Friday, about the Veterans Administration. You know, we presume, let me just rephrase that. Liberals and uninformed people presume that just because someone works for the government, that they're somehow above reproach, that they're somehow this moral person who's only going to do good and only has the good of mankind at heart. That's BS. Most of these people are in those jobs because guess why? They're cushy jobs! Right? You won't get fired, and you make pretty doggone good money. As a matter of fact, you know, a lot of people like to complain about the money that bankers make, and I'll grant you, some of the bankers who are at the top, like Jamie Dimon and others, who are the heads of banks, they'll make 14 or 20 or maybe even $40 million a year. But is that so unusual when, say, Kobe Bryant makes the same money for shooting a basketball? Okay, and I don't care, by the way, who he's working for. The average banker, and this includes when you factor in these high salaries for the chief executive officers, the average banker makes less money than the average bank regulator. And the bank regulators work for the government. It is not unusual for them to make $150,000, $200,000 a year.
And the average American worker earns 40% less than the average government worker.
Right. And then once, of course, they get that job, they buy into the liberal presumption that their butts don't stink.
And as long as they don't commit murder while they're on the job, while they're clocked in on the job, they're going to keep their job as long as they want.
Yeah. All right. Well, somebody who's got his place around here as long as he wants it is our man Carl Jackson, and he's lined up, and he'll be right up next. So don't go away.
Oh, Carl's corner is coming, and instead of sitting in the corner here in the studio, Carl's phoning it in tonight. So stick around. It is going to be a great one.
All right. Welcome back to the show, folks. I always want to go, yeah, when old Hacksaw's on there. Welcome back to the show. You are listening to the American Adversaries. We are on our 3-hour Sunday tour, and I hope you want to join us at 407-774-8255. And remember to keep that phone close for our Who Said That contest and when we give away those free bottles of Roxy Pacifics. And it's now time for Carl Jackson to be in his corner, so to speak, and he's going to present his take tonight on a very interesting subject, and it'll sort of kick off what we'll talk about more about in the second half, or excuse me, the second hour of this show. And don't forget, Carl Jackson's on live every Saturday morning, 8 to 9 a.m., and then they replay his show at 6 o'clock and on AM 660, The Answer, right here every Saturday. And once again, yesterday, a great show, and I hope you got a chance to catch it. So don't waste any more time. Let's go to Carl Jackson. Carl, Thanks for being with us.
All right. Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me. Thanks to Nostradamus, I have paper, or I have the words of Ivan Bundy in my hand, in which I've outlined and I've highlighted, and I'm going to make an attempt to interpret Cliven Bundy's words, because unlike many, I actually think his words were, many of his words were words that conservatives should have rallied to rather than run away from, and I know that may shock some people.
Bravo.
But his biggest mistake was in using, in my opinion, the word Negro, and obviously one sentence out of the entire statement that he made really made him look bad, unfortunately, and actually just destroyed his image. But I want to be clear about a couple of things. We will never see Cliven Bundy as a spokesman for the NAACP. however, he may be a better choice for the NAACP than the LA Clippers owner's Donald Sterling. So those are a couple of things that I want to make clear. However, after reading his comments, there's something that's not clear to me, and it's not clear the man is a racist. Does he have tendencies of an old white Westerner? Yes. Does that make him a racist? No, not necessarily. I don't know his heart. But I do want to go over his statement based upon what Nostradamus provided me, and just try to interpret what he said, because much of what he said is what black conservatives have been saying for a long time, which is why many of us get branded traitors and the like. But here's I'm going to go just sentence by sentence, basically, and try to interpret this, and you guys let me know when I'm running out of time here. He says, I was in the Watts riots. I seen the beginning fire, and I seen the last fire. What I seen is civil disturbance. People are not happy. People is thinking they did not have their freedom. They didn't have these things, and they didn't have them. So here's Cliven Bundy admitting that blacks didn't have the freedom that they deserved in this first statement that he made.
Racist?
Okay, his next statement. We've progressed quite a bit from that day until now, and sure don't want to go back. We sure don't want the colored people to go back to that point. We sure don't want the Mexican people to go back to that point.
Is he racist yet, Carl?
Not yet. And we can and we can make a difference right now by taking care of some of these bureaucracies and doing it in a peaceful way. So here's a man that's saying, listen, we've progressed to a point where blacks and Hispanics, they don't need Uncle Sam's plantation. They don't need to be slaves to the government. And when they are, they're unhappy people. But I'll go further into this statement. Let me talk to you about the Mexicans, and these are just the things I know about the Negroes. I want to tell you one more thing I know about the Negro. All right, he shouldn't have used the word Negro. Quite frankly, I use the word Negro, and I do it to be, I do it to cause a little bit of a hate storm, if you will. So perhaps he should brush up on some modern language, and that would have helped him out a lot. But he goes on to say, when I go to Las Vegas, North Las Vegas, and I would see these little government houses. And in front of that government house, the door was usually open, and the older people and the kids, and there was always at least a half dozen of people sitting on the porch. They didn't have nothing to do. They didn't have nothing for the kids to do. They didn't have nothing for the young girls to do. Obviously, this man has been to some parts of Apopka as well.
I was going to say, sounds like the west side of Orlando.
Yeah, I mean, this is stuff that's right on the money. This is actually biblical, too. This is, I make a statement oftentimes on air where I say liberals prefer welfare over work. And this is simply what the man is saying. And this next sentence goes on further to portray that. And because they were basically on government subsidy, so now what do? They abort their young children. They put their young men in jail because they never learned how to pick cotton. Now, this is a horrible statement. He should have never said it. But his sentiment was right on the money. He goes on further to say, and I've often wondered, are they better off as slaves, picking cotton and having a family life and doing things? Okay, now that's just a dumb analogy. But I understand what he was trying to say. Bottom line is families up until the early 70s were intact. Even though there was racism, they were intact. We saw Uncle Sam take over with the help of LBJ, FDR's policies trickling down as well. We saw the black family become dependent on government over God. And almost, I know it wasn't overnight, but it was pretty rapidly that the black family immediately began falling apart. And this is what this man is trying to express. Unfortunately, he's very inarticulate in doing so. He goes on to say, you know, they didn't get more freedom. They got less freedom. They got less family life and their happiness. You could see it in their faces. They were not happy sitting on that concrete sidewalk. This man is saying, despite the fact that blacks had voted for some of these policies that were giving them some of these welfare benefits, you could see that they had lost hope. It wasn't a matter of them voting for these policies for the sake of gaining happiness and true fulfillment. It was, hey, listen, I feel like I'm down. I feel like I'm hopeless. I'm going to keep voting for these policies. However, he's trying to express that, unfortunately, these policies have kept the black man hopeless. Now he draws a contrast. He talks about Mexicans. He says, now, let me talk about the Spanish people. You know, I understand that they come over here against our Constitution and cross our borders, but they're here, and they're people. And I've worked side by side, a lot of them. Now, he sounds like a rhino here, because I don't believe him.
He's starting to sound like Jeb Bush.
Yeah.
Came here for love.
That's in essence, if you read on, that's what
that's
he says.
What he's saying. Mm-hmm.
Read, Carl,
yeah.
Please, read
keep
on.
Going.
Yeah, and so he goes on further to say, don't tell me they don't work, and don't tell me they don't pay taxes, and don't tell me they don't have better family structure than most of us white people. When you see those Mexican families, they're together. They picnic together. They're spending their time together. And I'll tell you, in my way of thinking, they're awful nice people. What he's trying to do is say, listen, even though these illegal immigrants are coming across the border illegally, what I've seen, at least from them, is that their family structure stays together. The government subsidies haven't destroyed them to a point where they break up and break apart. It hasn't destroyed their family structure. So this is a contrast the man was trying to draw. Unfortunately, he was very inarticulate in his words. Like I said, he should have never used the word Negro. And I think just by using that one sentence where he said they put their young, well, because they never learned how to pick cotton. I mean, for God's sakes, there's been so many other industries that have risen up in the last 150 years. He could have picked another another industry to talk about.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, you take out that one sentence, and everything he said is completely relevant and completely true.
Absolutely.
And it's not something that we should back away from. We should look at this one statement that he made and compare it to the rappers that use the actual N-word. But they listen. The rest of this stuff is relevant.
Carl, can I interject? Because I would say even that one statement is not racist. And here's why. He's not saying something about the black race. He's saying something about government and work.
Right. Yep. And I tell you the truth. I have a note here where on the side where I say he's talking about government subsidies, and he's not talking about people specifically.
Right.
I'm just saying, in saying that and being so inarticulate and drawing that out, I know the man wasn't trying to be racist whatsoever. However, I just wish he would have taken a little more time to choose his words carefully. And if nothing else, I feel as though if he would have left that one sentence out, his words were actually a rallying cry for conservatives that are concerned.
The problem is with reality, Carl, is that in this business, you only get one shot at it. I mean, when you do something like this, you're done. You don't get a second chance. You don't get a mea culpa. That's the problem with being in media.
Well, I don't disagree with it, but if he changes his party affiliation by next week, he may be okay.
Well, I tell you, the person I'm disappointed, let's just put it this way. I'm not disappointed with Clive because he very clumsily said something that is very correct.
Sure.
All right. The person or people that I'm disappointed with are Sean Hannity and others, okay,
sure.
Who have just thrown this guy to the wolves.
Sure.
And they do not see through. If we can see it, Carl, why can't they?
You know what? Obviously, they're in a tight media circle, and they feel a lot more pressure than we do at this point.
Perhaps that's it. Perhaps that's it. But I'm going to tell you why what he said. Nothing in what he said is racist, because he wasn't saying anything bad about black people or Mexicans. In fact, he was saying good things. What he was saying was he was criticizing government.
Sure.
Okay? And in that sense, it was in no way racist. Brown versus Board of Education, a Supreme Court decision which says that black children can't be educated without being with white children, that is racism. That's what we're going to talk about in the second hour of the show. Thanks, Carl.
Yeah, not a problem. All right, take care, guys.
When America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Blair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostradamus. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Blair Adams, Nostradamus, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries.
We're back! Larry Adams finally back in the studio! And couldn't be happier, folks. Thank you for joining the American Adversaries on our wonderful Sunday night. Wasn't it a gorgeous day, folks?
Oh, yeah.
Guys, it was just amazing.
Great weekend.
A wonderful weekend. And I'm here with Christopher Hart, Johnny Guns, Nostradamus, Lucas is sitting in, and also we have Jeff back there running the board. And we were getting on some hot topics there, Chris, and you wanted to bring it back with... Carl isn't with us still, but
Carl,
I know
actually,
you want to follow up.
Now we'll talk about him.
His back is bothering him tonight. He had to do some. I know how this is. He was working on his trailer yesterday, and
he's so much younger than me. How could he have a bad back?
That's not a bad back. Just a, all right. But he'll be once again back with us next week, and he made some great points. You know, and I'm glad he went through Cliven's statement, and that isn't the only statement Cliven has made. Evidently, he was interviewed yesterday on CNN. I'll let Johnny give you some of those clips here. But I think what needs to kind of be done here, and by the way, folks, we are coming to you live on AM 660 The Answer from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studios. 407-774-8255 is the number, and we are back up on AM 660
After the Raiders game, if you can call that a game.
Yeah, wasn't much one, that's for sure.
It was a great game for about an hour, and then David Price just fell apart, and the Raiders
fifth inning. It was
a
pitcher's duel. And
four errors in the sixth inning.
Boom, lightning struck. But if you have been listening on 1520 WBZW, and you'd prefer to listen to us on AM 660 The Answer, you can zip on up the dial right now if you haven't done that. And of course, you can always listen to us at AM660TheAnswer.com on your computer or smart device and not have to worry about the radio dial. And tonight, you can actually even see us, right, Nostradamus?
Uverse.tv.
Ustream.
It's Larry.
TV.
Are you picking Larry?
Look, American
Adversaries. I want to be Mr. Man of Mystery.
There we are.
I would have worn a nice shirt there.
I know. All right. Before we get started here, when I get into this, we got a phone caller coming in. I'll go ahead and take the phone call and see if that'll kick us off, because I want to kind of pick up where Carl left off and where we left off in the last segment. And I hope you caught Carl's corner. And if you didn't, please go to our website tomorrow after the show, and when we'll post it up, AmericanAdversariesRadio.com, go to the archive and listen to it, because he went right through Cliven's statement, that the one that he's being held, you know, in disgust about. And I'm going to chime in on that. But let's go to Rick from Altamont Springs, who wants to chime in on this subject first. Rick, thank you for calling and listening tonight.
Yeah, two things I wanted to mention, and then I'll listen to your answer.
Okay.
First of all, what do you think of Sterling's statement?
I'm going to get to that. Mm-hmm.
And number two, if somebody came on your show and said, oh, we ought to get rid of all the Italians, they're all mafia, or all the Irish people, they just sit around and drink all the time, it's the same thing as saying they're sitting around in front of their front porches and aborting their babies. It's the same kind of racism. You don't seem
Let me say,
Lair agrees with me because he's the only one that makes any sense.
Well, I'm sure he appreciates that. But let me tell you why. Because you were trying to compare apples with oranges. First, you said if an Italian person or somebody came in here and wanted to do away with Italian people for this
moving to this country.
He is not making a statement about getting rid of. Did he say anywhere in that statement or since or before, for instance, to send all blacks back to Africa?
Well, maybe not doing away.
Let me finish my point.
Rick,
you're not seeing the mistake you're making in your logic.
Do you want
to let me finish?
All right.
No, they're not racist. Okay, and here's why. And I'm glad, and I want to thank you for calling tonight. I appreciate you being out there. And let me just go ahead and take off into what I was going to say. It is not racist to make an observation that people are being ill-served by government. And that is what Clive and Bundy is saying.
But he's
saying two things. Please let me forget, or I'm going to have Jeff cut you off. Okay, I'll let you stay on as long as you let me make my point. Okay, he's saying basically two things. He's saying, one, government is destroying family life. And I have statistics, and I read them here on the radio Monday afternoon. Larry, we weren't here, but I can go through them again. This is a phenomenon that we're seeing not only with the black family, but we're seeing it with white families. And lo and behold, yes, now we're even seeing it with Hispanic families.
Which he didn't mention.
And that is that the more we become dependent on government, the less we need and have a family. And what he is saying is that a family is crucial to humans' well-being and happiness. Second, he is also saying that work is extremely important in a person's life to be able to achieve that happiness and be able to provide for and participate in a family. And guess who else said something very much the same thing? A man who said that work, labor, the things that you do with your brain and your hands is the highest form of human creativity. That man was none other than Karl Marx. You must understand that when you tell a person he does not have to work, you take away their human worth.
But saying they all abort babies and they all sit around in their front porches.
50% of the black population is being aborted.
Yeah,
50%. You have a 1 in 2 chance of being aborted if you are conceived in a black woman's womb.
Well, okay.
That is the fact of the matter.
All right, but it's the same thing as what I mentioned about saying Irish people or Italian people. It's the same.
You're pigeonholing. And the other problem here is you are interpreting what this man said. The average person over there, no matter what they hear, they for themselves is going to gleam onto this. And my problem with this whole thing with Clive and Bundy is he's going to bring conservatives down. If you want to have this discussion elsewhere, fine. But this man pigeonholed one group of people, not Hispanics, not whites that were in the same situation. He pigeonholed one group of people. And the other part about comparing it to slavery may be being better because that's totalitarianism. You take away people's right and their ability to screw their lives up. And that's what freedom is. Our forefathers gave you the freedom to screw your life up and to say that slavery is better because it would stop you from screwing your life up. You're taking a whole other argument onto this guy that he never made.
Speaking about whole other arguments, then, if we should have the right due to the Constitution to screw our lives up, are you now for doing away with prohibition? Are you now for legalizing marijuana?
That's a different argument.
No, it's not a different argument. It's all the same thing. And this is the absolute genius, if you will, in Clive Bundy's remarks, is that he was talking about government being the problem. It is destroying an overbearing government, just like Carl said. The plantation owner now is Uncle Sam. Uncle Sam is the plantation owner who wants to make slaves of all of us.
Okay, should people have the freedom to figure that out on their own?
And that's what we're doing. What do you think is happening?
Not if you...
you have to understand.
Not if you say it's better if they were in slavery.
Would you please read the man's remarks?
I've heard the man's remarks.
No, you haven't. Because what he does not say anything in there bad about black people. He goes out of his way to say things positive in there about
Latino people, who he calls Mexicans. What he is making observations about is the effect of government and government subsidies.
What about Sterling?
Sterling is a whole nother... Sterling is a great example of racism. Because he is talking about black people, and he is making disparaging remarks about black people. Clive and Bundy is making disparaging remarks about big government. And the only problem that Republicans are going to have is because they're going to look like a bunch of wimps because they couldn't see through and cut through all the liberal BS to see what the man was saying. And as far as the slavery thing goes, that is not a racial statement. It is an observational statement. You can disagree with his observation, but that does not make the man a racist. It's a subjective opinion, not an objective opinion.
So is every opinion of the person who hears it?
I'm sorry?
So is the opinion of every person who hears it? That's why my point is, this guy's going to bring us down, conservatism down. This is an argument that he is not bringing anything positive to the table, and it's the wrong time. This guy, okay, you can ballyhoo him all you want. It's going to make conservatives look terrible. And that's why, you wonder why these other guys are running from this guy? That's the reason why.
They're running from the guy because they're cowards, and they fail to see what the point the man
that ain't going
to
win no elections. You guys talk about how we got to do what it takes to win elections. That's not going to win elections. That's going to get people running from
standing
your butt.
Up for the truth will win elections.
No.
Oh, yes, it will.
Your truth.
Yeah,
if they don't agree with your truth, it's not their truth. It ain't going to help.
It's not my truth. It is the truth.
If you say it is.
Well, it doesn't
not
matter.
Not to any other individual in the world, Chris.
That's for people to decide
for
themselves, right?
Yes.
And that's why I'm here bringing up this side of the argument. Because you're the man who's being closed-minded.
Well,
you're the man who is teetering
I read people
you're
better.
You're the man who's teetering on being racist. And if I can continue the argument, I'll tell you why.
Okay?
Because people that think that black people can't do it on their own are the racist. People that think black people need government assistance are the racists.
Well, I never said that.
All right. People that believe, for instance, in the Brown versus Board of Education decision, which decided by the Supreme Court that black people can't get a good quality education without white people being around. These are the kinds of notions that are at the root of what you're talking about.
So they're all sitting around on front porches and aborting babies, and slavery is better? That Lair gets it. You don't.
No, what you don't get, sir, is that he is making a subjective observation
that is
not racist.
Yes,
if he said that that's all they were capable of, that would be racist. What he is saying is that this is what big government subsidies are doing to people. And if you don't sit up and take notice, it's going to happen to you, too. It is already happening. The family structure in this country is being destroyed because of government subsidies.
So slavery is better, right? I mean, you just missed the point.
No, sir, you missed the point. You missed the point, but you didn't miss the boat because you are listening to the American Adversary, so you are in the right place. We appreciate you being out there, Rick.
Right,
but we got our other master liberal on the line who I'm sure wants to agree with Lair, too. A great achievement. He's got liberals agreeing with him. But anyway, stick around, folks, because we're just
getting
warmed up tonight. You want to call liberals sane people? And welcome back, and you are listening to the American Adversaries, and we are, if you couldn't tell, we are live and lively.
Woo!
Here we are on Sunday.
It's Lair, not Lar. Yeah.
Lar.
No Lars here. I'm not saying this.
You're big old Lar over there.
You are listening to the American Adversaries on AM 660 The Answer, and we are on AM 660 The Answer, as well as 1520 WBZW. And I forgot to remind you folks Friday that we might be getting clipped a little bit by the game. Just remember, on Sunday nights, you can go up to 1520 WBZW if the Rays or the Rays postgame show happen to be on during our our show time.
That's this Friday?
No, that I meant to tell people Friday about today.
Right. Okay.
And forgot to, but just as a heads up, and during the week you can't do that, unfortunately, but that's the bad news. The good news is we should only be preempted maybe two more times during this baseball season during our drive time show. Anyway, we're here. We'll be here till 8 o'clock, and we already got a couple callers on the line, but you can call in too. 407-774-8255 is the number. And, of course, keep that phone close for our Who Said That contest, and we give away, and when we give away a couple of free bottles of Roxy Pacific. Before we get to the phone lines, though, I'd like to go back to Rick's call, and his question to me, or to us, or to Cliven, or whoever, was, so slavery is worse than what we have today. Is that my point? And after I thought about it, I'd have to say yes. In some ways, it is worse, and here's why. At least in slavery, you knew you were a slave, right? Right? Right?
Okay.
All right? You knew that somebody owned you.
Mm-hmm.
You knew that you were being denied your rights. You knew that you were being, you know, dominated. Well, with the same thing is happening with government, only it's being we're being told that it's we're being done a favor, right? Like Barack Obama, he did us all he did you a favor by taking your insurance away from you, didn't he, Lair? He did you a favor by taking your choice away. He did you a favor by dominating you and being domineering over you. That is what we're being sold. So in that sense, I would say we got a bigger problem today, because back then the problem was easy to see.
Well, yeah, I guess so. But when you add slavery in there, that's where they sold men and women and separated. They used women as basically cattle to breed other sellable items, where men were whipped and beaten, etc.
That's the bad news. The good news is, if you were conceived inside a slave woman's womb, you had about a pretty much 100% chance of being born. So the trade-off is today you got a 50% chance.
Well, here's Al. Let's see how much of...
Before we get to Al, I'd like to go through a few things, all right? First of all, there was a huge mistake made in the Supreme Court, and we have been living under this mistaken assumption ever since. And this goes to the heart of the affirmative action decision that the Supreme Court just sort of made this past week. This decision needs to be corrected, and it's Brown versus Board of Education. And it is heralded as one of the greatest decisions, in the sense of being the best decisions of the Supreme Court. It was argued by Thurgood Marshall, who became would later become the first black Supreme Court justice. It happened under the Earl Warren Court, and Earl Warren was a Republican governor of California who ended up presiding over some of the most liberal decisions in the history of the Supreme Court. And it was a unanimous decision, thanks to the fact that Earl Warren put the pressure on all of the other court members, in particular a man by the name of Felix Frankfurter, love that name, who was the first Jewish man to sit on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, he's a real hot dog.
And he was a slight man, and Earl Warren was a huge man. And it's not that he physically, you know, bullied the man, but he more or less bullied him in argument-wise, because what Brown versus Board of Education is based on the assumption is this, simply put, and that is that a black child cannot get a good quality education unless they are sitting in a room with a white child. That, my friends, is a patently racist remark and or racist proposition and assumption. And here's why. It is saying that black people can't do it on their own. That, my friends, is racism. What was been expressed, if it was by Donald Sterling, and all indications are it was by Donald Sterling, those type of remarks, that is racism. When Clive Bundy comes out and speaks about the devastating effects of big government on human beings and uses the most clear example of that, which is the black community, like it or not, he is not being racist. So maybe we all ought to think about what it exactly means to be racist. And here's where Rick was trying to split hairs. On the one hand, he wanted to say that Clive Bundy wanted to get rid of blacks and all this. Clive Bundy doesn't say that. Clive Bundy's remarks are, these people are sitting on their porches, they're not picking cotton, or however he inarticulately, as Carl said, expressed it. What he is saying is, these are the effect of big government, folks. And lo and behold, they will come to you, too. And this is some of the statistics that I read on the air Monday, Lair, when you were out. The two part, this was an article in the Wall Street Journal, ignoring an inequality culprit, single-parent families. In other words, what these men argue is that one of the biggest reasons behind any income inequality is the breakdown in the traditional family. Let me just read you just a couple of sentences here of statistics. The two-parent family has declined rapidly in recent decades. In 1960, more than 76% of African Americans and nearly 97% of whites were born to married couples. Today, the percentage is 30% for blacks and 70% for whites. And the out-of-wedlock birth rate for Hispanics surpassed 50% in 2006. In other words, the more we become dependent on government, the less we depend on one another. And that is bad for the human soul. That is bad for the human psyche. And I guarantee you, just drive over there down Paramore and see how many happy faces you see sitting over there on the porches. It's a sad fact of life that government is destroying not just the black community, not just the black family, but all of our families. And this is why we shouldn't blow guys off like Clive Bundy when he says it, even if he does so inarticulately. And one of the biggest problems you brought out about the Republicans, one of the biggest problems Republicans have is that they're a bunch of doggone wimps. Now we can go to the phones.
Al, you're on line one. Al, are you still with us? I hope so, buddy.
I'm still here because
I need help.
It's too exciting not to be.
Thank you. Thank you, buddy.
Okay, now, here's my thing. Saying that the blacks depend on government are too stupid to depend on themselves.
He didn't say that.
Racist, but he didn't.
Excuse me, Al, if you're talking about Clive and Bundy.
I think he may be talking about you.
He didn't say that, and I didn't say it either. No, what we're saying is
that
we're all, as we all become more dependent on government, and Obamacare goes to right to the heart of this, because it's going to make more and more people dependent on government.
Well, let the guy finish his statement.
Al, go ahead.
Okay, anyway, saying that the black people are too stupid and they can't make...
None of us are saying this, Al.
I hate to interrupt you,
but you're not telling the truth.
Nobody is saying that. If anybody is saying that, it was Thurgood Marshall when he argued in Brown versus Board of Education, because that decision was based on the assumption, and it is clear in the decision, that black kids can't get a good education without being around white kids. That's why we had busing. That's why we had, quote-unquote, the desegregation of schools.
That's fine, Chris, but here's the point, okay?
And you only got 30 seconds.
The point is that for you to say that the blacks got duped by the government and they're the only ones that fell for the welfare program.
I'm saying that's happening to all of us, and it's devastating our community and our culture, and it is going to be the destruction of our country if we do not stop it right now. We'll be back.
American adversaries. They may be some bad men, but they're great guys.
We are back, the American adversaries, into the second half of our three-hour tour. Nostra Dennis back here. Foremost of all, I want to apologize to Al for cutting him off with only 30 seconds left in the segment. I got very emotional because when people say that I say things I didn't think I said, it gets me upset. And I don't think anyone, Clive and Bundy, Chris, myself, anyone called black people stupid or too stupid to see through what the government's doing. I don't think that's the case at all, but I apologize.
If there's anybody out there too stupid to see through what government's doing, it's the liberals.
I apologize to Al for not
doing it.
I apologize to Al for not giving him enough rope to do what he wanted to do with it. At any rate, I want to circle back before we keep on our phone calls to something Carl said, because he was talking about this issue, and one thing stuck with me that I think is the crux of the whole thing. He said, I don't know his heart, talking about Clive and Bundy.
Right.
And people all over the media are jumping right on top of this story and the Sterling story. They are damning both these people because of something they heard on an audio clip. Yeah. Now, a year and a half ago, we were convinced George Zimmerman was a racist because he said, yeah, he's a black guy. Till we found out MSNBC edited the responses. Okay? So let's not rush to judgment. Let's find out the the entire circumstances. Johnny's going to bring up some of the facts of the Sterling story a little bit later. There's a little more to this than an old white guy who doesn't like black guys. All right? Yeah. Well, let's go back to the phones as quickly as we can, because we do have a guest coming up quick.
Yeah, Eva, thank you for calling.
Eva. I just want to say, you guys are getting worked up like somebody said, Sean. You guys are in the media, and you get, just like you said, you cut Al off because you get it up, heated up by the moment, and that's human. You're being human. The problem is people up in New York are under a lot more media pressure than you are. And the thing of it is, I think it was Nestor Dennis that said about the heart, none of us knows each other's heart.
Right.
The only person that knows the heart is God.
Yeah. Carl said that at first. And yeah, if you're hosting a show on Fox News Network, getting 11 million people to watch you every night, sure, the pressure is going to be on every word you utter and every gesture that comes from your face when you're on the air. So, you know, you can tell Sean Hannity he's under the microscope. We're not so much as he is.
Here's what I want to say. Thank
he's still
God
a wimp.
For Clyde Bundy.
You said thank. Yeah, why?
He said the truth because people don't like it.
Yeah.
It's the way it was and it's the way it is.
Yep, that's
and
right.
We see things in the way we live in the world, and we all live different lives. And what may affect you, unless I'm in your shoes, you don't understand what affects me. Now, I think it was Lair that said something about the government. Well, let me tell you something. I'm from old school, and when I went on Medicare, I helped my father when he got on there, and I knew that I would be on the government's plantation.
Yep.
And I don't trust the government. I don't have no choice.
Yeah.
I have to do what they say to do.
There it
is. I still can speak out. And thank God I've lived through it, so I know the difference. But all I ask you guys to do, don't holler at each other, because some of these people out here are so dumb. I know how come your emotions get involved, because mine does too.
I didn't call anyone dumb. Eva just did.
All right, Eva, thank you very much. We appreciate your phone call, and we appreciate your advice. And by the way, we're talking about Carl here. He texted this to me while we were talking to Al, but I was so emotional I didn't see it. He says, if that's Al, make sure he calls out the liberal-leaning Donald Sterling and the NAACP giving him, and this is true, a lifetime achievement award despite knowing that he was a racist simply because he gave them money. And guess who else took Donald Sterling's money by the fistful?
Lots of basketball players.
Lots of Democratic politicians.
Oh, them
thank
too.
You very
okay.
much. I wonder if old Al Not So Sharpton is going to demand that they give that money back. I wouldn't bet on it. Let's go to Robert from Orlando and see what Robert has to say about all this. Thank you for calling, Robert, and thank you for listening.
You're welcome. And Chris, I'm with you 100%, man. Listen, Blair and Nelson Dennis, I think, agrees with Chris. But Carl was right, too. You know, the liberals and the progressives, they are so good at twisting things around. I don't know who said it. Somebody said once that if you control the language, you control the population.
You're right. I don't know who said that either, but, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
It's exactly what they do, and they do it every time. And Lair, I'm sorry, but you're falling into the trap. So is Sean. So is Glenn Beck. I think the only one that I've heard over the last week that hasn't fallen into it was Rush Limbaugh.
But and me. And me.
You and Rush.
And
okay, Chris.
Thank you. Right. Carl, you are absolutely correct if you're listening, but there's nothing word with the wrong with the word Negro. There's nothing wrong with it. That's a word in the English language that describes a race, a person.
Okay.
It's nothing demeaning at all.
They call the United Negro College.
Now listen to me.
Go ahead.
We have grown adults in this country, adults, people in politics, people in business, people in media, that say stupid things like "don't use the N-word." How childish is that? How childish is that to even think that, to even say that? Don't use the N-word. Look, I'm not saying to use the word, but that is so childish.
It's like we're being taught, told something by our teacher or principal, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Robert, thanks for calling. Have you ever gotten a free bottle of Roxy Pacifics yet?
I have, and I've used it, and it's wonderful.
All right.
I have a quick question for Robert. Robert, will these comments by Clive and Bundy, if they're picked up by the other side, the Democrats, are they going to be used against Republicans, and is it going to come back to haunt them, you think?
Oh, but they've already used them against her. It's already been done.
Well, I'm saying, you know, in the next general election, I can see it.
You've already said, Larry, well, it's going to hurt the Republicans. It's going to hurt the Republicans. It's going to hurt our chances. No, that's what they do. Everybody's got to look through that. Look, how did this start? It started with this guy standing up for his land rights to graze his cattle and to and tell the government to leave him alone.
And we're not talking about the government harassing him anymore, are we?
Exactly.
We're talking about how he's a racist.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now they turned it around to all this.
Well, one had nothing to do with the other.
No, but that's what we're talking about.
You see, part of what is happening here is that the liberal media is trying to destroy this man because he has become a threat. He backed down the government. How many people can you say backed down the federal government? I can't think of any.
He did the equivalent of that Chinese kid standing in front of a tank.
Like Sarah Palin and others, he is now a huge threat who needs to be made a buffoon out of. No, and I refuse to help them do it. Thank you, Robert. I appreciate you calling.
Okay, hang on, real quick. Yeah. I listened to what he said, and Chris, you read it. I did not hear one word from that man that was derogatory. Not one word.
Yep. I agree with you.
But what's happened is he's now thrown his gun away. He has no gun after this.
Oh, he'll have friends who have guns.
Thank you, Robert. All right, we're going to go to Rick and then Marie next. Rick, thank you for calling. And you're going to have to make it quick because we're running short on time. But thank you for holding, too.
Evening, guys.
Hey.
I hope you took your blood pressure medication.
Yeah, you know, the left is successful at getting our blood pressure up, aren't they?
You know, if Samantha was here and that no profanity sign was here, she'd be pointing at it right now. Anyway, go ahead.
Didn't cuss.
Okay.
I heard you during the break.
You guys are right. You know, you both have good points. Larry, the media will twist anything. You can go out and say that the sky is blue, and the media will jump all over it and call you racist.
Call you a denier, a global warming denier.
Right. But I have had the same conversation with a black coworker who is in his 60s bemoaning the situation of his race in his neighborhood because he had Hispanics that were moving into the neighborhood, and he bemoaned the same fact that Clive and Bundy stated. So I look at it this way. If those statements of Clive and Bundy were uttered by an old black man, is that racist? And it's not. It's not racist to point out the problems in the community. If you look at the black male, he has a 50% chance of being aborted. He makes it out of the womb and then 70% chance of being born to a single-parent family, which means that he is most likely to be raised in poverty and go to a bad school, and most likely he will drop out of school and have a 25 to 35% unemployment rate. These are the things that he's bemoaning.
Right.
He's not saying anything about the race. It's the situations they've been put into. They're on their new plantation, and he used picking cotton as a metaphor for gaining the work ethic.
Right.
Because anybody who works has a sense of self-value, of self-worth.
Thanks
and
for
that's what he's saying.
Thanks
because
for saying it.
Argument from my black coworker.
Yeah.
So don't tell me this guy's racist. That he is just not articulate.
Thank you for articulating what I was trying to say.
Rick, please understand. I'm not disagreeing with Chris's argument of what the guy really meant, or even some of that the whole conservative idea of what he's saying. I'm saying what this guy said is going to draw people's hackles up. It's not going to get people focused on the problem. It was the way he said it, and that's why I understand a lot of other people bailing on this guy because it's going to make people look bad.
They're bailing because they're wimps.
Those
wimps are votes.
Sorry, Rick. I agree.
All right, well, let's go to... Thank you, Rick. We appreciate you being out there. Let's go to Marie from Maitland, who is online, too. Thank you, Marie. You'll be the last call before we go to the break.
Okay, this is a poem that I wrote while I was sitting here listening to you. Only if the shoe fits. It was fine in the late 60s and early 70s to put a black man out of his house and telling his wife, you got no money unless you help us make your man less than a mouse. Yes, we had four, maybe five babies with the same last name. You just could not stand it, so you made us play your game. Now the time has come to pay the price. Don't forget, you rolled the dice.
That's a very interesting poem. Are you saying that basically what we're trying to say, I'm trying to say here, and that is that big government has been a pariah to the black community?
I think that a lot of not just African-American people, but ethnic people, period, have been forced or led to the government.
Yes.
There was no other way for them to go.
That's the last alternative.
The job selection they couldn't get a good job selection.
Yeah.
They couldn't go to a decent college without having, Equal Rights Institute in the government. So the government has been what they've had to stand on all along. It couldn't just be treated as a human being.
Right.
You know, and me as a black person, that's all that most black people want.
Hey, I agree
with
you.
They're not looking for that extra little something. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do. I understand exactly what you're saying.
It had to come in the form of that, sir. Let me explain to you.
Well, I'll tell you what, you're going to have to... Marie, I'm going to have to stop you because we have to go to a break. Marie, we have to go to a break. Okay, but I tell you what, since you want to make the point, we'll hold you over to the break, and please stay with us. Welcome back to the show, folks. That's right. You are listening to the American Adversaries on our Sunday 3-hour tour. And we are live, as always, 407-774-8255 is the number as we come to you on AM 660, The Answer. And by the way, you can see us tonight if you go to ustream.tv and look for the American Adversaries. You'll be able to see us there live in the studio. And we've been talking about racism and what isn't racism, and Clive and Bundy. And Marie is on the line with us, and she has penned a poem during our discussion. She read, but she wanted to make another point, and I want to go to that. But first, Marie, let me ask you, have you ever gotten a free bottle of Roxy Pacifics?
No, I haven't. Thank you very much.
I'd like to give you one. It's great.
You'll love
stuff.
It's the best stuff on planet. Anything to do with skin, your throat problems, eye problems, it's wonderful.
Great stuff.
Okay. It's not snake oil. I'm telling you, it's great.
You're welcome. Your point then.
Okay. The point was my poem. It's just, you know, all of this race stuff should never have been in the first place. You understand what I'm saying?
No, I don't believe I do.
After we got over slavery and everything, and they had to write a law in order for a black person to be free or sit at the counter or this, that. I had those things happen to me in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, very derogatory type of situation.
Yeah, I know.
It never has to be.
Well,
you know, why does somebody have to be less than someone else?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think it's so much that. It's just that human beings naturally are fearful animals. And we fear that which is different from us. And this is not, you know, just endemic to the American culture. This is a human being thing. You will find racism in every human race that there is. And some are more racist than others. As a matter of fact, the Japanese, are some of the most racist.
That knowledge, sir.
What's that?
You should be bigger than that. You should be able to go out and tell, this is the way I live and this is how I think.
And that's what we're doing.
You will need me.
That's exactly what we're doing, Marie. That's exactly what we're doing.
You will need us, we will need you, and all of us will need God the Father and Jesus Christ.
Amen to that.
Nothing gets any better than that.
Amen to that. I mean, that's what we preach on this show.
And so I'm trying to figure out where all this stuff comes from. I get aggravated when I have to fill out an application that says, are you a black American
African black or, you know.
Do you leave it blank? Because I do.
The answer to your question.
Coming up who the, you are. They're going to put you on a special list.
Your question is very simple. This comes from liberals. These are liberal progressive policies. These are policies that are based on the assumption that this group or that group can't do for themselves and therefore needs big government to step in and give them a helping hand. And that is the biggest lie of all. That is the lie that underlines the Supreme Court decision, Brown versus Board of Education, which is based on the presumption that a black child cannot get a good education unless that child is with a white child. That is patently racist, and that is patently the liberal philosophy. So if you want to look at blame for the people who want to know what race you are, you need look no further than liberals. But thank you so much, Marie.
Liberal, Democratic, just doesn't seem to be a whole lot of difference in any of that anymore.
Well, I will agree with you. I appreciate it, Marie. Thank you for your point, and we'll leave it on that point of agreement because we have a guest who's been patiently waiting for some time now, and I do want to get to him, and perhaps he has some observations on this. This man has led a fascinating life. It started out with him working at his dad's business, which he and his sons still own. That led to him being exposed to professional wrestlers who would come work at his dad's business to make some real money, and that led him into the wrestling business, and he also ended up in Washington, D.C. during the Reagan and George H.W. Bush administrations, sitting on what is called the Congressional Advisory Board. He is presently a commissioner with the Missouri Boxing, Wrestling, and Martial Arts Commission, and he also sits on the board of Cauliflower Alley Club. And so I want to welcome to the show this evening Carl Lauer. Thank you, Carl, for being a part of our show.
Oh, no problem at all. Kind of fun listening to everybody there.
Well, since you listened, where do you come down on this? You heard what some of the callers and what we had to say.
Well, mainly just the last lady, but I don't know. I can only speak for myself. I joined the Air Force in 1958, and back then they had what they call a buddy system. And the guy I went in the Air Force with was a black gentleman. Back then we called him colored. His name was Johnny Carter. He was one of the singers with the original Coaster Group.
Hmm.
And we were in basic training together, and that's the first time I ever really saw prejudice because California, we, as a young person, I never remember prejudice. But when we got to San Antonio, Texas, on our first leave, I saw it very heavily in restaurants where, even though we both had on an Air Force uniform, we were told we don't serve. They use the N-word here. He can go to the back room.
Right.
And I simply made the comment, hey, we're wearing the same uniform. And with me, our third buddy was a guy named Ron Voigt, a Voigt rubber that made all the footballs and, you know, all that stuff.
Oh, wow.
And we were all three buddies in the Air Force together. In basic training, because we lost each other after that. But I couldn't believe that. Here it is, 1958, and they said, if you're going to want to sit with him, you guys can go in the back. So the three of us went in the back.
Yeah.
But I never had that problem before. One of my closest friends today is Eddie Carter, no relation to Johnny Carter, better known as Budokan, roller derby skater, professional wrestler, and his dad was a Medal of Honor winner, recently presented that posthumously from World War II by President Obama.
Wow.
So I don't play the race card. I don't believe in that. And I think a person should be judged on their own, what they are, what their ability is.
Not content of their character, right, Carl?
Beg your pardon?
The content of their character, not the color of their
absolutely,
skin.
Absolutely. I mean, in my factory, the years that I ran Float Air Corporation, I remember some goofball from the state came and told us, you do not have enough minorities working for you, and if you don't have X number of minorities working for you, you will be severely dealt with. And I said, I don't know who you are, but how many do I have to have? But he gave me a number, and I got hold of a secretary and showed her. She gave me the list, so I asked the guy, I said, look, if it's your idea, you go out and pick the five you want to fire, because I got five too many.
Yeah.
And this guy, I mean, he turned four shades of blue. He said, what do you mean fire them? I said, you said I have to have so many and I've got five more than I need. So it's only fair that you be the one to go and pick the five you want to get rid of.
Yeah, and Carl, I think that that's at the heart, really, of what we're talking about here, is that in the name of supposedly doing good for, say, one group, it is disruptive to society in a whole nother way. And that has never entered into the equation when we say, oh, yeah, we should have more government subsidy here or more government subsidy there. We never look at the real cost of that on the other side of it.
No, no. And there's people that, because of their nationality, are extremely skilled in specific trades.
Right.
I mean, I would much rather have a group of boys from Mexico putting a roof on a building than I would union guys from St. Louis.
I tell you,
They're hardworking, and they can do it, and they do a good job. Let me give you a really good example. This will kind of...
Carl, I tell you what, we've got to go to a hard break, so please, can you stay with us and stay with us in the next half hour?
Sure.
Okay, and we'll be joined by Sonny here in a few minutes, too. But ladies and gentlemen, please don't go away. We've got 2 hours in, but we've got a whole nother hour to go, and this show is rolling by extremely fast, so you're not going to want to go away. We've got...
fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries.
Welcome back to The American Adversaries, ladies and gentlemen, where our slogan is, what, more screaming?
What do you mean?
Less screaming!
More screaming, less screaming.
More screaming, less screaming. There we go. It's been a great show so far. Thank you for tuning in, ladies and gentlemen. We got Lair Adams, we got Christopher Hart, we got Lucas, Nostra Dennis, Jeff, we've got me, Johnny Guns, and we've got many, many more people to get to on the phone line, so Chris?
Well, we're going to get back to our guest, Carl Lauer. Sonny, our California Glow Girl, is going to join us momentarily here. But I do want to get back to Carl. Carl, we had intended to have you on for that whole last half hour, but we got some radical phone action there. So
got caught up in some racism.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so, let's get off that subject and go to what you want to talk about.
And I want to get you back in the future. But first of all, you are a business owner yourself. This is a business that you told me your father started and your sons still run.
Right, called Float Air Company, Float Air Corporation. It's headquartered here now at our ranch here in Rolla, Missouri, but it was in California from 1947 to 1994, and here since 1994.
And that's a great achievement there, and American entrepreneurialism. And you also, because of something that you did for one of your sons, you found yourself in government.
Well, I don't think you could say in government, because it definitely wasn't paid. It was non-paying type situation. That was something started by President Reagan his second year in office. And it was called the Peace Through Strength Coalition, which ended up becoming the United States Congressional Advisory Board. And they selected a certain amount of business people from just about every state, and congressmen were the one that actually asked you if you'd be willing to serve on it, because it was non-paying and it was going to cost you to be on it, basically, because they didn't pay our way to Washington, D.C., which I went every 6 to 8 weeks for meetings, and they did pay for our hotel when we were there. They did feed us. But as far as transportation and time spent was strictly gratis, just because you were willing to do it.
And you served on that for how long?
Almost 11 and a half years, actually. Maybe closer to 11 years, actually.
And so you were there at a crucial point in our country's history.
Right, 82, 83, 82, to President Bush Sr.'s, when he lost the election, they made a lot of changes, a lot of new congressmen, asked a lot more people involved. And David Dreyer said, yeah, if you want to stay on, I'll keep sponsoring. I said, no, 12 years is long enough.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. I met some unbelievable, fantastic people. And the guys that were, you know, the head of the group when I was there was the Senator Jake Garn and Jack Kemp and Senator Bernard Johnson and Bill Chappell. These were the four guys that kind of headed it up that I've worked with on a semi-regular basis, so to speak, if not in person on the phone.
Right. And how does it make you feel that many of the Reagan-era policies are being blamed, if you will, for the income inequality and things of that nature that we have today?
Well, I think people that talk that way either are too young to have been around and know what they're talking about, or they're just listening to some rhetoric that someone is coming up and saying. You know, when Reagan left office, this country had little or no debt, even though we had huge expenses with Star Wars. One of those projects I was involved with was the Dew Line Detected Early Warning System all across the Arctic Circle. In fact, I spent 10 months in Thule, Greenland, up at the Air Force Base up there. And sure, they spent money, but look at the things that ended during his administration, and businesses flourished.
Absolutely. And of course, he ended the Soviet Union, which fell during the Bush administration, and the Berlin Wall fell. And being peace through strength, where do you think we stand today? I mean, you see now that we're heading in the opposite direction, I take it.
Oh, ridiculously. Now, I can't believe they want to reduce the military when we're involved in conflicts on two or three different countries. I mean, that's like saying, well, you got a fire, but we're only going to give you half the water. That's definitely asinine to want to reduce the military in times like this, because where are them people going to go to work? You think they got unemployment now. What are you going to do when you put 800,000 guys out of the military, and where are they going to go work at?
I know. I mean, we have all these programs now, one of them headed up by the First Lady herself, trying to find jobs for the people who are just naturally leaving the military service. And now they want to lay a bunch more off, basically.
And they want to open up the borders for more people.
And they're closing certain bases and stuff. This makes no sense to me whatsoever. And it's just the same thing with their gun policy. You don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar to realize that every country that de-armed its citizens eventually fell to become close to a third world country, let's put it that way.
A dictatorship.
Absolutely. You know, and I remember the quote that I read one time from Hirohito, the guy that, you know, the Japanese guy that decided to bomb Pearl Harbor.
Yep.
He made his first comment after about 4 months into the war was, "I am afraid we have awoke a sleeping tiger."
Yeah.
And he made the comment, the reason that we're not too interested in invading America is every one of them blanks have a gun.
A gun behind every tree.
Yeah, every rock.
I mean, this is why an adversary thinks twice before coming. Now, here in the Ozarks, I don't think you're going to find 2% of the families that do not have weapons.
Yeah.
And we're all hunters. We all have pretty good-sized pieces of property. We hunt. We don't hunt people. And, you know, that stupidity that guns kill people. Guns don't kill anybody. People kill people.
And I'm betting in your neighborhood there's not a lot of people breaking into other people's homes.
None. We don't even lock our houses. We don't even lock our cars. Mm-hmm. We don't take the keys out of the ignition.
Wow.
I mean, my farm is pretty good size, so not a lot of people come around. We don't get too many strangers walking around. But if something happens, I mean, this what I love about moving here when I left Los Angeles, which, by the way, I wouldn't go back to unless you gave me Alvira Street for the taquitos. I miss about Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And I lived there most of my life, 60-some years of my life. But we don't have them kind of problems. I mean, I remember the first year over here, we had a tornado come through, and within a half hour, Frank Barnett and his dad, George, were at our house seeing if we were okay because we were new to the area, so to speak. Well, Frank was our state representative and later our state senator for 10 years.
Wow.
I mean, these are just neighbors. They care about each other still.
Right. And
you know, I mean, I've had guys call me up and say, what are you doing? I say, what do you want me to do? We need you to drive the truck. We got to get the hay in before the rain comes. Okay, but they did, you know, I could drive the truck for them. If I need them, I have no trouble calling 10, 12 neighbors that are willing to help.
Yeah.
That's old-fashioned, but it's wonderful.
It may be called old-fashioned, but it works. It,
absolutely. I mean, people care about people.
Right. And that's part of the problem, too. When government steps in too much to try to help people, it replaces people. And
well,
so you rely on government, and it becomes so impersonal.
Well, to me, that's the biggest difference between the two parties. Democrats want more government. Republicans want less. That's really the biggest major difference.
Yeah. And there'd be a hay truck driving bureau.
How to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not strictly a Republican. I mean, I vote Republican in many, many cases, but I was actively involved helping George Wallace get on the ballot way back then.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I like George Wallace as a person.
Yeah.
And all the stuff that they said about him, I mean, it was so crazy. It was ridiculous. But, I mean, you look at Alabama, which is, you know, during his administration, went from in the Bob last five of the 50 states into the top 20. Guy must have been doing something right.
Yeah. Yeah, and he was a product of the times.
And he was smart enough to say, hey, you guys, the Democrats, you're all wet. I'm going to start my old goodie.
Yeah, yeah, you're right about that. And Carl, when you left the Congressional Advisory Board, does it still exist?
To be extremely honest with you, I really don't know. But I think it does. If John Fisher, who I understand probably passed away, who was the executive vice president of it, and it was a good organization, but I think after George Bush Sr. Lost the election, I think that it really lost a lot of its go, because any of the political backing of major names that we could, I mean, I attended a meeting one time. I was asked to sit in on a meeting, and it's just kind of comical, but it's funny and true, though. And it was Jeannie Kirkpatrick, who was Secretary of the United Nations.
Yep.
General Secord, who was the general that Carter fired and Reagan rehired, General Segura, who was a brigadier general, and Admiral Russell, who was the commander of NATO, and me. And we're sitting there on this board, and General Secord, he says, Lauer, Air Force, right? I said, yes, sir. He said, what were you, brigadier? Bella Herman, second class. And J.D. Kirkpatrick popped up. Let's make him the chairman. He's the only SOB that did any work on this table.
Hey, I love that woman. I wish that she had run for president.
I would vote for her for president.
Absolutely. Jean Kirkpatrick.
And I would vote Condoleezza Rice tomorrow for president.
Amen to that. Both very strong, capable, smart women.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't care what color they are. That makes no difference. Condoleezza Rice is probably one of the most educated women.
Brilliant woman.
Today. And she was a great Secretary of State.
Absolutely. And accomplished quite a few things.
Well, yeah. And well, everybody around the world liked her because she didn't come in playing the race card. She didn't come in saying, look who I am. She came in as a person. Let's sit down and talk.
Yeah, she wouldn't have let Benghazi happen, I don't think.
I don't think so at all. No.
Yeah.
Not if she could have helped it.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Hey, Carl, we've got to take another break. When we come back, we're going to be joined. We're going to join, have Sonny join us for the conversation.
Oh, good. Well, that's my favorite, Patricia.
Okay. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Carl Lauer. And as you heard, he sat on the Congressional Advisory Board during the Reagan and first Bush administrations. Fascinating time in world history. And, you know, Pope John Paul today was just canonized.
St. John Paul, yeah.
Yeah, well, he was a part of all that, too. And if you'd like to participate, 407-774-8255 is the number. And don't go away.
Well, just a few minutes left, and then we're going to, you know, during the break, of course, then we have the beautiful Sunny, the glow girl from Southern California coming to join us. Folks, like Chris said, you got the phone number there. We love those phone calls. And be sure to listen up. We will be back.
Hello! And here we go!
Is he talking about garden equipment there?
Welcome back to the show. We are the American Adversaries on our three-hour Sunday evening tour, and we are coming to you live on AM 660, The Answer. And tonight, we're also live on, what was that called again? Something TV?
Ustream.
Ustream.tv.
Ustream.tv.
Go to Ustream.tv and search for the American Adversaries, and lo and behold, we'll pop up live. There's Nostradamus waving at you. All right, we've got a great guest on the line, Carl Lauer, who we're going to definitely get back in the near future because we could spend the whole show talking to this man and just scratch the surface of his life and where he's been and some of the things he's done and people he's met. And but in a moment, we're going to be joined also by Sunny, our California glow girl. But I do want to go back to Carl. Carl, all your time in Washington, D.C., who was the most, how should I say, influential person that existed in those days around the Reagan administration?
Who would I say?
Yeah.
Well, of course, I mean, I was President Reagan. I mean, I had the pleasure of meeting him on two different occasions, and just to be around him was one of the really exciting things, but as far as the person that I actually thought he was going to go much, much farther and get stronger into politics was a man named Howard Baker, who was a senator from Tennessee.
Right.
But he just reached the point where I guess he just saw the writing on the wall and decided he didn't want to play the game anymore.
Wow.
So, I always admired Howard Baker, and I always enjoyed Senator Kemp and Senator Dole at the time. He was pretty up and coming at the time,
and of course Jack Kemp had some great ideas in terms of how to turn around the economies in the blighted inner city areas.
Yeah, and you know, George Bush Sr., as far as I'm concerned, was an outstanding vice president. He was always very, very available to people. He never was on a high horse. None of the time that I ever saw him, or when he became president, he still was down to earth as his son was. You know, people want to blame Bush for all these here so-called problems. That people are welcome to do that if they want to. But you look at the facts and figures when either one of these guys were president. I mean, George Bush was to me, I admired George Bush almost as much as Reagan. I mean, he's the youngest fighter pilot in history.
Yeah, that's right. You're talking about George H.W. Bush.
Yeah, the dad. I call him Senior and Junior, but
right.
You know, but yeah, that to me, but probably the most influential, the one that I enjoyed talking to more than anybody was Jeannie Kirkpatrick.
That's why I was wondering if you were going to say, because she was quite a woman.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
She controlled the United Nations well, and
yeah.
My biggest complaint with her is that she could outswear any two sailors I knew. She got wound up, but she was a fantastic lady and really brilliant, and you knew exactly where she was coming from and where she was going. She did not worry about, do you like what I'm saying? Just listen to what I'm saying.
Right. I want to ask you one more question, and I want to bring Sonny in on this. You know, Ronald Reagan was quite roundly criticized by many liberals around the world for the Star Wars program that you mentioned. And you were in it from the very start. Was there ever any assumption that it was not a doable thing?
No, not at all. I mean, you stop and look at it today, we wouldn't have all these satellites flying around out there and all these weather things. The World Wide Web would never even got started. None of this stuff would have happened if it wasn't for him breaking outer space, so to speak.
Wow. All right. Thanks.
Good point.
Yeah, excellent. And now you went on to become you were a wrestling promoter. And
yeah, 1979, Gory Guerrero. You probably heard of the name Guerrero anyway.
Sure.
And Eddie became famous in recent years. But
yeah.
Gory was the father of four wrestling sons, Mondo, Hector, Chavo, and Eddie. And Gory came to me and said, hey, I like your idea, even though Mike LaBelle, who was the promoter at the time, thought it was stupid. But Gory thought it was a good idea, and he said, what do you say you and I do it? So Gory Guerrero, his brother Paul, and three of my business associates formed a promotion called Six Amigos. And we opened our first wrestling arena, took over the old Strand Theater in San Pedro, California, and turned it into the Strand Arena. And that was in mid-1980. And then I promoted right up to 1994 when I moved here in Missouri, started a promotion up here in Missouri with Harley Race, and it was called World Legion Wrestling. And then I sold it to Harley in 1999, and it became World League Wrestling, which is still operating today, one of Missouri's better independent promotions.
Wow. Does Harley Race still own it?
Oh, yes. Yes, Harley Race still runs it.
And you work with...
It used to be in Eldon, now it's in Troy, Missouri.
Yeah.
Harley's still around, still kicking, still you still don't want to get him mad.
I hear you. Yeah, I tell you, he was a good wrestler. I mean, in terms of, you know, the finer points of wrestling.
Yeah, right. Harley, yeah. He was one of the really, as Lou Thesz would say, one of the truly great performers.
Yeah. Okay. Sonny, I want to bring you into this. This is Sonny, our Patricia Summerlin, our California Glow Girl, who's with us every Sunday night. Sonny, thanks for being with us and holding.
Hi. Oh, absolutely. You know, it was quite interesting. Carl is truly amazing and so much to talk about. I'm just... Wow.
Yeah, I didn't know there was this whole, you know, you told me that he talked politics, but I didn't know that he was right in the thick of some of the greatest political decisions this country has ever made. And Sonny, tell us how you met Carl, if you would, please.
Well, as everyone knows, I'm on my way out to, we never retire, we stay in wrestling, we're still always in. Once you're in the ring, you're always in.
Yeah.
I was blessed to meet him at the California Alley club, which is a CAC that he was the head and president of, and now I believe you have since retired, right, Carl?
Well, I will at next April at our 50th anniversary, 50th year, I will officially retire. I've had it management since 1983.
Isn't that something? See, and I was blessed to meet him up in Las Vegas each year so far, and hopefully I'll see him this year again in June, which I'm excited. And
I need another glow attack, Sonny.
Excuse me?
I need another glow attack.
There you go. That's right. That's right.
Well, that's fantastic stuff. Carl, I'm afraid we're out of time. We're going to have to let you go, but I promise you, sir, we're going to get you back on in the near future, okay?
That'll be fine. You give me a call, just give me a little bit of time, and we'll sure try to make it happen.
All right. Well, we definitely will. Thank you so very much, Carl Lauer, for joining.
Thank you for having
me. Oh, anytime, sir. It was a joy to speak with you, and we really do appreciate it.
We're honored.
Absolutely. Anybody that served this country during the Reagan administration, hey, that guy's, you know, he's a friend of all of ours. Sonny, he is a fascinating man, and he has worked with all the big names and all the names in wrestling, really.
Oh, yes. I told you I'd have a good guest, and I truly admire Carl. He's so funny, and he's just really personable. I just adore him, and I look forward to seeing him again here in June, like I said, definitely. I have a knockout joke as well for you guys.
Ooh, we love it.
Go ahead and lay it on us. Lay it on us, then we'll take a break and come back to you, okay?
All right. That sounds wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Go ahead. The knock-knock joke.
Oh, okay. Ready now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, guys. Knock-knock.
Who's there?
Noah.
Oh.
I know a bunch of guys that are on American Atmosphere.
Her time, 7 o'clock, our time, and we're here for a whole nother couple of times, so don't go away.
American Adversaries are coming back, like he said. So, folks, it's time for news.
Sexy and smart.
And appreciative of those comments.
Did she do that live? Because I know she's on the
You know,
line
I object
right
to the fact that we're on Ustream right now, and you can see us live on the internet,
but
you can't see Sonny.
Oh, the best part of the American Adversary is we can't see. Ustream.tv is where we're at if you'd like to watch us do the show. And we appreciate you being out there. We're the American Adversaries. We'll be with you another half hour, and we're going to try to cram a lot into this. William, we will get to you, so please hold on the line. William, stay with us. We will get your comments. But first, I want to go back to Sunny, our California Glow Girl. She lives in L.A. She lives right down. Hey, Sunny.
I'm out here, yes. Hi, everyone, again. I'm back in wonderful downtown Los Angeles. I'm looking at the palm trees blowing. It's a bit breezy today, but it's a beautiful sunny day.
And now you
just
live.
Like I like it.
You live right across the street from the Staples Center, right?
Yeah, well, I can see it from my apartment right out my window. I have a view of everything in downtown, and it's beautiful. It's just a blessing to be able to see all these wonderful high-rises. At night, it's just gorgeous. Yeah, the light change, the Staples Center. You know, hopefully there's not going to be any rioting over there at the Staples Center due to the Clippers thing. Huh?
That's what I was getting ready to lead up to. I was going to say, have they burned the place down yet? Because this is some pretty incendiary stuff. This fella said, how's the city of Los Angeles taking this?
Oh yeah, everyone's in upheaval. It's a shock. I mean, this Donald Sterling, you know, the owner of the Clippers, I guess it was just over the conversation between him and the woman, basically, which is really horrible. I mean, his remarks are very, very racist, and he obviously disagreed with the woman and told her, you know, not to come to the game, and please don't bring any black people, you know, and just adamantly don't come. And don't bring black people. What's that about? that's pretty tough.
Yeah, evidently,
all right.
People have known that this guy is, let's just say, not the nicest guy around. They've known that he has these tendencies. Many of his players, Johnny, weren't you telling me that some of his players expressed anxiety to play for him?
Byron Davis did an interview about 2 weeks ago, even before this whole mess with his girlfriend came out, and said that he had never experienced anxiety playing for anybody else before until he came to the Clippers and met Donald Sterling.
And evidently Sterling would...
Did he hint at it being racist, his anxiety?
Well, he's been sued by the federal government for allegedly being discriminatory against people who are renting from his properties.
Right, and that's what Carl was referring to when he said the NAACP still gave him a Lifetime Achievement Award because he gave them a bunch of money after those incidents because he was trying to clean up his reputation.
How money works, huh, guys?
Yeah, was Sterling a very big figure in L.A. before all this? In other words, was he a quiet owner where you didn't hear much about him until now?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you, his comments when he also mentioned another one, which is pretty rough, too. He had mentioned in Israel, by the way, that all blacks in Israel are treated like dogs.
What
these comments are just, there's a list of what this man has said, so it's pretty hard to back out of that. I don't know, but I guess money talks, huh?
Right.
I don't know how he's going to get out of this, though.
So. Oh, he's not.
No. Yeah.
He's not.
Yeah. Yeah, but will the NAACP give him the money back?
That's my question, too, because a lot of Democratic politicians, both in the California state political scene and the federal political scene from California, have taken money from this man. And so we'll have to see if anybody presses them to give that money back. Is there a groundswell in L.A. that is beginning to show itself where people are demanding that he get rid of the team or let go of the team? Or
there's a lot of talk of that, and I'm surprised that the Clippers don't turn on him and just stone him with basketballs right over the head or something. You know, they need to take him and dunk him.
You're absolutely right. It turns out that this is evidently a nasty domestic dispute. Would you call it that, Johnny, between he and this woman?
Oh, certainly, because his girlfriend, and I'm using that with air quotes, supposedly is the subject of a lawsuit from Sterling's wife. For $1.8 million that the wife is claiming that she embezzled because Sterling gave her all these gifts.
A million-dollar apartment. And so,
Exactly. And Vivian, or the V, I don't have her name right now, Stiviano, is quoted as saying that I will make you pay for this as far as the lawsuit.
Yeah. I think she might win.
Yeah, well, it sounds like this was, you know, a woman scorned or whatever, but unfortunately for this guy, he got caught with his hand in the cookie jar, so to speak, didn't he, Sonny? Talking about Sterling?
Yes. Oh, yeah, definitely. I would say he's pretty red-handed, you know.
Yeah.
He didn't have time to dip the cookies in the milk, you know.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, we're running short.
I must say, not chocolate milk, and I guess he probably wouldn't have any chocolate milk in his fridge.
Oh, of course not. Only the white stuff. That's right.
All right, Sonny. Well, listen, we're just out of time this week. Thank you for holding over, and thank you for introducing us to Carl, and we'll look forward to talking with you some more next week.
Oh, Absolutely. My pleasure, you guys. You know that. Can't wait.
Have an awesome week, girl.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. God bless you. God bless you, and good night. And she'll be back with us next week. And let's go now to William, who's been holding from Sanford. William, thank you for calling, and your points, please.
Yes, okay. Number one would be, the only thing that can save America is the spirit of the American cowboy. Number two, buy and wear a cowboy hat to show support for the Bundys.
Okay.
You like that, right?
Yeah, I like
that. Let me just give you a couple more, and then I'll hang up.
All right.
Okay. Number three, make it mandatory for Congress to watch Mr. Smith Goes to Washington at least once a week.
Not a bad idea.
Till they get it.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And last but not least, The Milagro Beanfield War by John Nichols was made into a movie by Robert Redford.
Yeah, I saw it.
Same story as the Bundys.
Ah.
Okay? And the little guy wins. Read it.
Mexican Rancher.
And watch it.
Yeah.
How's that sound?
Excellent stuff. Hey, William.
It's a good film.
William, I'd like to give you a bottle of Roxy Pacific, so we're going to send that on over to you, okay?
Okay. I love you. I love for you, your show, and I love for you to discuss some of the things I just brought up.
Thank you very much. And
God bless you, and God bless America.
And Jeff has his information.
And same to you. Yeah, same to you, and we appreciate your patience holding as long as you did. We really do appreciate that.
Thank you. You like those points, though, right?
Every single one.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're all going to wear cowboy hats next time we do a streaming version of the show.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Well, you guys got passion. That's all.
We're genuine too.
You guys want to save America.
That's it. All right, thank you, William. Thank you, William. All right,
bye.
God bless you, man.
Did you guys hear talking about the Clippers story? The team actually was thinking about boycotting today's game.
Yeah, they thought about it. They decided not to.
But considering the result, they may have anyway.
Yeah, they lost by 21 points today.
Ooh.
But in protest, they wore their warm up attire inside out.
Wow. That shows them.
Yeah.
That'll fight the man.
Well, really, what else? They really couldn't do anything as a team and as players, so that's at least something visible that they could.
Yeah, well, that's one thing's for sure, and Lair's right about this. The Liberals are not going to let go of this story, that's for sure.
And he was nowhere to be found. He's not in Los Angeles right now.
No. He's
got better places to be. Maybe Nevada. Yeah,
the NBA pretty much came out and said, you're not going to be at Game 5, and it looks like he's not going to be at any other games until this gets resolved.
All right. Be interesting to see how.
Probably not sleeping with his wife either.
I bet he's not either.
I think that's a pretty safe bet there, Lair. And what's another safe bet is that it is time for WTF News with our very own Johnny Guns. Take it away, Johnny.
Thank you. Story number one. Members of a church in Oregon are hoping to spread the gospel to exotic dancers in Portland by bringing the ladies bushels of baked goods. Dancers at the Sunset Strip Gentlemen's Club will be visited by members of the Cedar Hills Baptist Church congregation. Cedar Hills pastor Curtis Booth says, quote, "We want to deliver a message of hope, love, and transformation. It's just a simple way of saying we care about you." He also went on to say that the DMV and the fire department are also expected to receive tasty treats. From the church, not from the...
I was wondering about that.
Sunset Strip manager Jim Harrison appreciates the church gesture. He says, quote, "They're trying to reach out and help their community. This isn't the first time the church folk have visited the strip club and say members were well received in the past." Booth said, 2 years ago, we did this, and some of our older ladies, they let them come into the dressing room. Now, I love the irony of this story because it's ladies delivering goodies to ladies who deliver goodies.
I'll tell you right now, dollars work better.
And you didn't even get to the muffin top joke.
Stayed away.
Thank you.
Stayed away.
The idea, though. You go where the sinners need you.
That's right. Amen.
And we're all
sinners. You signed up for that ministry, didn't you?
And we're all sinners in the end.
A 3-year-old boy who had been reported missing by his worried mother was found trapped inside a claw machine at a Nebraska bowling alley.
Police? I think I saw this on South Park or something.
I love this story. Police in Lincoln, Nebraska received a call from a woman who said her son slipped out of their apartment through an unlocked door while she was in the bathroom. Fortunately, mother and son were soon reunited after patrons at a nearby bowling alley spotted the toddler sitting inside the claw machine. A police spokeswoman said that the toddler was uninjured and playing happily with the toys in the machine. Local television station reports that the woman was not cited for any misconduct as she
contacted the police immediately after discovering that her son was missing. Though police were able to find the boy safe and unharmed, it took them several hours and over $400 in quarters to get him out.
Come on now.
It's got him, but it keeps letting go.
Can't get him in the slot.
Oh, wait. I got a Bart Simpson.
Oh, goodness.
All right. Have hoo-hoo to save the country?
What is this?
That's essentially the meaning of the Do It for Denmark campaign sponsored by travel company Spies Leisure. One of their ads says that Denmark's birth rate is at its lowest level in decades, and the Washington Post confirms that Danish people aren't making babies like they used to. But the travel company sees hope in the stat that Danes have 46% more hoo-hoo when on vacation. Hence, the ad campaign suggests that Danes should get out more often and, you know, have some hoo-hoo for the good of their country's longevity. If procreating isn't its own reward, Spies Travel further sweetens the deal. If you can prove that you conceived your child on a trip that you booked through the company, Spies Travel will give you 3 years of baby stuff. Talk about doing it for the good of the country, right? And if that's one way to define patriotism, I'm a poor excuse for an American.
Oh, that's
There we go.
And by the way, do you know in Italy they have a similar problem where the women are just deciding not to have babies?
Mm.
It is a problem.
How do you fix that?
I'm saying,
I better not go there.
I'm not going anywhere except that it's a cultural thing, and you can't just pass a law to change that. You've got to change the culture.
And as I said the other day on the show, that's a problem. That's what's driving the drive to reform immigration laws, really, in this country. It is the fact that we're getting ready to roll over and be in negative population growth. And when that happens, we have huge problems, financial problems, going forward. In essence, we have not been manufacturing human beings because we have been aborting them. And mm-hmm. So now we have to import them in order to shore up our economy.
Proves my point. Social Security is a Ponzi scheme, and it needs new people at the bottom in order to continue.
All right. Mm-hmm. Did you guys hear about Red Fox going to the White House?
Red Fox!
Yeah. Red Fox.
Sanford and Son?
Well, not that Red Fox.
Oh, no.
Maybe I should say a Red Fox.
I was going to say, what was it?
Elizabeth! I'm coming, Elizabeth!
Allegedly, during the government shutdown last fall,
caused by the Republicans, yeah. Ted Cruz,
a Red Fox snuck onto the grounds of the White House, and they have yet, at least at last report, been able to catch him. Even the president has stumbled across the Red Hound as he was walking around the yard where the president comes and goes to the helicopter out there, and the president was heard to say, WTF? Seriously, there's a Red Fox running
7 months he's been running around out there?
Digging in Michelle's garden, getting in all kinds of trouble, and being elusive.
It's good to know the White House is safe and secure.
Yeah. Secret Service.
We'll be right back.
Where's that fox in my yard? I know it's around here somewhere. Oh, my goodness. I don't know what color it is. It's not about color.
Don't take a selfie with it.
Speaking of it's not about color, we've all taken our chill pills.
He does
here
like to get
American
pictures with foxes,
he
does. Doesn't he? Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Selfies.
We're degenerating, folks. We need a reverend to come in and clean things up next hour. So maybe John's
right
over
there.
Over on 950 WTLN. Might be a good option at 8 o'clock. But until then, you've got us for 7 minutes and 18 seconds more, and that means you've got Lair's closing comments. Lair.
Thanks, guys. Now, here's a factual story for you that took place in the late 1950s. I know it's true because I was there, although very young, say 5 or 6. It's one of those memories from childhood I'll cherish till Alzheimer's or old age erases it. It takes place in my hometown, Stuart, shortly after moving there from West Palm Beach. It was a time when no one imagined the area, or Florida for that matter, whatever grows so big. My family had recently joined a new church, which leads to the crux of this story. I've told you before I was the youngest of 4 boys, which has its ups and downsides. You feel you're picked on and bullied by the older siblings every time you don't get your way. But the upside is you don't have to learn respect from your parents. You learn from older siblings, whose respect for mom and dad is evident and omnipotent. Plus the fact that they let you know certain death followed lack of respect. Yes, I'm kidding.
This was before pre-K or even government-run kindergarten. But a regular event that even preschool-aged children were exposed to was the Sunday morning ritual of going to church. Now keep in mind, this was long before megachurches. In this era, a megachurch had barely a couple hundred members. The little church we joined had far less. To a five-year-old, going to church on Sunday morning was as much a constant as the sunrise. As with every morning, started with the proverbial good morning breakfast. Our meals never involved squabbling. My parents wouldn't allow it. And somehow my mother made sure every scrap of breakfast was eaten. For some reason, back in the 50s, sugar was not a deadly poison. A few sprinkles on cold toast became gourmet eating when placed in the leftover milk of your cereal bowl. Dressing for church is where the real ordeal began. It meant clean clothes, coat, and tie. Thank God for the guy that invented the clip-on tie. He was more brilliant than Einstein to a young boy. Your shoes had to shine, and Mom would sometimes even make you change your underwear. It was an era where everyone was a middle-class American, which meant everyone was a short step from being poor. Our story centers on one son, discs the size of a quarter that I swore was made of styrofoam. At least it tasted like that. At 5 years old, the symbolism of the communion service was lost on me. I was in for the grape juice. As the ceremony began, the pastor instructed the ushers to pass the awful-tasting discs around on silver plates. Now, keep in mind, our church was not air-conditioned. Most of that time weren't. And the only relief from the summer sweltering heat was large fans. A fact that became apparent as one of the ushers, retired Judge Klontz, made the mistake of carrying his silver tray too close to one of the fans. You guessed it. Hundreds of little white frisbees exploded into the air. The symbols of solemnity were picked up by the other fans' expulsions and floated for several minutes throughout the congregation as poor Judge Klontz tried to shrink into nothingness. It was manna from heaven that no one wanted after it hit the floor. The gasp from the members soon turned to chuckles, even though the event was solemn. As even the pastor knew, somewhere, God was grinning like an upside-down rainbow, as he occasionally does when he sees how serious we humans can be. As for me, my biggest concern was, as a five-year-old, are we still going to get the grape juice? Have a great weekend, great week, friends, and lighten up a little.
So very, very good words there tonight, Lair. It conjured images in my mind of when I was a kid. The same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you had to go.
You know you were going to church.
Yes, sir. Oh, yeah. The clip-on tie. I think there's still, I still got one of those around mm-hmm. the house.
And don't play the sick card. The sick card. Never worked on church
this
morning.
When you got home, it was Sunday dinner.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But and this kind of goes back, and I know you wrote that before, obviously, you wrote that before we did the show tonight, but it kind of goes back to what I was trying to say earlier, and I think what Clive Bundy was trying to say, and that is that in reality, there's nothing more important to a human being than family, God and family. And he may have said it in an extremely clumsy sort of fashion, but in essence, that's what I think he was trying to say. And in another sense, I think he was trying to warn us all. And this goes to what Marie was saying, and that is that we are all subject to the same destiny if we put our destiny in the hands of government. So very, very good words there tonight.
And no government can replace our family, even the most benevolent of governments.
Right.
You mean it
true.
Doesn't take a village to raise
a child? No, it takes a village to raise an idiot.
We have plenty of those.
All right, so I'll take my cue. And just to remind you folks, the John Butler book will be coming on live here in just a few minutes, and you'll find him at 950 WTLN or 105.5 FM. And he'll do a great show, as he always does. And you can call his show as well. And he doesn't cut you off like I do. And don't forget Carl Jackson live every Saturday morning right here on 660 AM The Answer from 8 to 9 AM. Marshall Polston live every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 3 PM. We have a brand new show that started just a couple of weeks ago. Saturday afternoons live from 3 to 4 PM. Arms Room Radio.
I heard some of that.
Yeah, yeah, and these guys do a pretty good job, especially since they haven't done this before. And, of course, you have Mark Walters with Armed American Radio, who picks up right here on AM 660, The Answer, when we go off the air at 8 o'clock, and they'll be live until 11 o'clock. Do like me. Go up and listen to John and then come back for Armed American Radio. And Thursday is National Prayer Day. Mm-hmm. And Reverend Book just gave me this. If you'd like to come out and join us at Maitland's National Day of Prayer, it would be at the Maitland Civic Center this Thursday, May 1st, from 6 to 7 p.m. It'll be followed by a prayer walk around Lake Lily there. So please help us, you know, bring back that America that Lara was just talking about, where it was just a course of business. Then on Sunday morning, you went to Sunday school because it was the thing that families did.
American Anderson Center has loved spending the previous three hours with all you folks, and we can't wait to see you tomorrow at 5 o'clock, because we're always here at 5 o'clock, except on Saturdays, but you can do without us one day. Have a great night, folks.
Night, everybody.